This is Sarah Stewart Holland.
This is Beth Silvers.
You're listening to Pantsuit Politics,
where we take a different approach to the news. Thank you so much for being here. Sarah's on spring break with her family, and filling in for her is my absolute favorite person in the world, my husband, Chad Silvers. Chad, I'm so glad that you're here today.
I'm so glad to be here.
We're going to lean into some of your interests today. We're going to talk about technology and gambling and hats.
Yeah.
Your three favorite things.
I'm ready.
Is there anything not on that list that should have been if we were just covering the territory of Chad's favorite topics?
We could just talk about you.
Oh, very good. Well, before we get started, we want to remind you that next week is a big week for our book club. We're going to close out this round with our interview with Marissa Moss on the book Her Country. We'll also be launching our summer series. Now, our premium members who are already really into the book club chose the two books for this series. They are novels that we hope you'll enjoy for the summer. They are The Displacements by Bruce Holzinger and The Sentence by Louise Erdrich. Premium members of the Spice Cabinet will have first access to buy the curated boxes containing both books and some other treats put together by listener Lisa, who runs the bookshelf on Church in Irvington, Virginia. Those sales will start on Monday, April 8th, based on your level of support. There are a limited number of boxes, so the best way to ensure that you get one is to be in the highest level of support that you feel comfortable providing here at Pantsuit Politics. Whether you buy the books through Lisa or not, all of our premium members get to participate in discussions which happen through those spaces, Patreon and Apple Podcast subscriptions. We have community discussions and interviews with the authors. We are really excited to talk about The Displacements with the author this summer, so we hope you'll join us. I wanted to tell you a little bit more about our premium spaces and why that membership is so important. We just got a report from our sound design company, Studio D, that showed in 2023, we needed about 900 hours of production done by them to our shows. So those kinds of expenses of running this business and keeping the podcast free and available for all of you here are what the premium space makes possible for us. So thank you to everyone who's part of that. And we hope that you will consider joining us in the book club if you aren't there already. Next up, we are going to talk about the Department of Justice's lawsuit against Apple.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Traditionally, financial planning advice is either only for those who are already wealthy or salespeople calling themselves financial advisors who say they'll give you free financial advice but really just sell products to earn commissions. Fearless Finance takes a dramatic departure from either of those traditional models. Their entire business is built on making financial advice accessible and affordable because we know that financial literacy, stress reduction, and financial security are critical to overall well-being. I'm a little bit obsessed with Elizabeth, our Fearless Finance advisor. I've had an array of advisors in the past who answered questions like, should we be spending less on this, with evasive answers like, it depends on your priorities. Not Elizabeth. She answers with actually helpful guidelines. You're spending more than the average family of five, or I'd like to see this increase by 6%. Thank you. This is Fearless Finance's mission, to make advice affordable and accessible. You meet with your planner virtually and they charge you by the hour. You only pay for the time you use down to a quarter hour. Their planners meet with you where you are on your financial journey, no judgment. Visit fearlessfinance.com today. You can chat with a planner for free to make sure it's a good fit, and you'll get $50 off your first planning meeting when you use the code PANTSUIT. That's fearlessfinance.com and use code PANTSUIT for $50 off your first planning meeting.
Chad, you are an early adopter of all tech, and you've been with Apple for a long time. Do you have any disclosures you need to make about your involvement with Apple?
Yeah, it's been a while. I've been an Apple shareholder since before the iPhone launched. I've used their products for a long time. I've used plenty of other competitor products, too. I'm an early adopter. I tried Google Glass, if you remember that crazy thing. I had a watch that got notifications before the Apple Watch was invented or launched. I've been around the tech world for a while.
Okay, well, I wanted to talk to you because of that about the lawsuit that the DOJ has brought against Apple. So let's go back to June 2019 for a minute, when the FTC and the DOJ sat down and said, okay, we got to do some antitrust work against big tech here. Everybody's getting too big. We can have big tech, but I guess not mega tech or something. And so the FTC took Meta and Amazon, and the DOJ took Google and Apple. So this investigation has been in the works for a very long time. And it grows out of a theory that antitrust law should target market concentration as just inherently bad. Even if it doesn't cause prices to be higher, there is a theory in the Biden administration, this New Deal-style anti-monopoly campaign, that if you get too big, if you have too big of a market share, that's a problem. So the DOJ filed this case on March 21st, along with 16 states, and it's brought under the Sherman Antitrust Act. Now, the Sherman Antitrust Act says that you can be a monopoly if you're just really excellent and that's how you became a monopoly. But you cannot do predatory things to get there. Before we get into the details of this complaint, Chad, do you think in just common parlance that Apple is a monopoly?
I don't, no.
And why not?
The rule about whether or not it's monopoly is whether they've gained their market share through nefarious means, right?
Mm-hmm.
I can't say that they've done that. Or at least I don't see direct evidence that they've done that beyond, the nefarious acts that every large company does.
Do you think that it's a monopoly in the sense that it doesn't have real competitors?
No, I think there are very big competitors. I mean, Google is a competitor. Samsung is a competitor. Those aren't small. Those aren't small competitors.
I know that every time we have ever discussed, well, maybe we should make an app for this, it sounds really daunting because you would have to make it for both Apple and Android. I don't know if that cuts in favor of what the DOJ is saying here or against it, but I do have that competitor in mind, you know, when we have those discussions. It's not like I forget that Android exists.
Yeah, I'm involved with people that make applications and have to deal with Apple, Google, the Amazon Fire TV platform. I mean, there's a lot, Roku. There's mm-hmm. a lot of different ways that you have to develop an application to work on devices in general.
Okay, well, let's talk about what the DOJ says. I think that this sentence from the introduction is really the heart of the complaint. They write, rather than respond to competitive threats by offering lower smartphone prices to consumers or better monetization for developers, Apple would meet competitive threats by imposing a series of shape-shifting rules and restrictions in its App Store, guidelines, and developer agreements that would allow Apple to extract higher fees, thwart innovation, offer a less secure or degraded user experience, and throttle competitive alternatives. Now, I think the complaint reads like melodrama. It's like, if Apple is not stopped, it will take over the whole universe. We have talked before about Apple as a walled garden. The DOJ calls it a competitive moat.
That's a great turn of phrase there. I think I bristle at just the very first part of that Apple has raised prices to further their monopoly. That sounds backwards to me. I mean, Apple never started out as cheap to bring in customers, like a lot of companies do, get a critical mass of subscribers or customers, and then raise the prices on them after you've eliminated competition. Apple wasn't cheap from the get-go. Their price has been relatively higher since, I don't know, the Macintosh, maybe even earlier, like the Apple II. Definitely when the iPod launched. I mean, the iPod was kind of their first foray into a higher-end device built mainly on design, or, you know, one of the big features of it being the design. I mean, people were buying it not just because it was a good piece of technology, but because of the social cachet of doing so. But with Apple stuff, at least I think anybody paying attention from early on has known when you're buying Apple, it's going to be a little quirky because it is that walled garden.
And do you think that that degrades the user experience?
I don't. It's definitely a way. I mean, Steve Jobs' plan very early on was control the hardware and the software. And when you do that, you can provide the best experience because you're, you know, the limitations of the hardware, you know, the strengths of the hardware, and you can develop the software to go with it. Now, today, of course, you're going beyond that. You've got hardware, software, and experience slash utilities associated with it.
Yeah, the DOJ seems to be with you for a minute. Like, Apple has always been expensive, and it's always been really good at design, and the DOJ says marketing, that Apple spends an awful lot of money on marketing, and that's part of why the prices are so high here.
But is that, we should go after Coke.
I know, I hear right? you. That, yeah, I feel the same way. But then it says the first mass market success Apple experienced was the iPod, and that was because of iTunes. It was the marriage, like you said, of hardware and software that made that product really successful. And it is also ironic because Apple was able to get iTunes on PCs, much more popular than Macs at the time, through an antitrust lawsuit against Microsoft. And I think sort of the isn't this rich tone comes through throughout this complaint.
Yeah, I think that's a little different. You know, they're letting applications on to a platform. Apple has let applications on if they meet their guidelines. They just don't want to have a third-party app store as part of their ecosystem. And that's kind of what we want here, or maybe the central point of the argument, is that ecosystem mentality, right? And Apple's not the only thing that we're used to having an ecosystem on.
A competitive moat around?
A competitive moat around. You know, I talked about marrying hardware and software so that you don't overtax a processor or that you use memory efficiently. But, you know, if you have that third-party app store, you're letting other apps use the hardware that you have. So it's no longer just a processor and memory and a screen. There are sensors and the data coming through there they can pull. So when you're talking about a third-party app store, you're trusting a lot more people with your information, with even just your phone, right? You spend a lot of money on that. So when you're using those third-party app stores, there's less trust.
Well, the DOJ says Apple is not so much worried about trust as much as it's worried about money because of how Apple takes a lot off the top absolutely everywhere. So not only are new iPhones expensive and you feel like you need a new iPhone every time one comes out, but they also take 30% on apps. They take 30% on additional features within apps. They take fees on every tap to pay transaction. They take a cut from Google on ad revenue that comes through Safari searches. And all that results in Apple's net income exceeding any other company in the Fortune 500, as well as the GDP of more than 100 countries. So they say, sure, trust. It's about money.
Yeah, and that ties into another lawsuit that happened in the EU. Spotify claimed that Apple didn't let them inform customers of cheaper alternatives to subscribing within iOS. Your audience probably knows that if you subscribe to some services directly through that service's website, you'll pay X. And if you subscribe through your iPhone, it's going to be X plus something. And that's there to cover those fees. Now, I can't feel too sorry for Spotify here. I mean, I'm a Spotify user. Mm-hmm. Great service.
Love Spotify.
I think that's where your own marketing needs to step in. You know, Spotify isn't a startup. They've got the marketing wherewithal to do this. It's incumbent upon them to advertise and let their customers know, or let the public in general know, that it's more expensive because you're going through Apple. Now, if they're saying they wouldn't have got those customers if they couldn't get them through Apple at the higher price, then, I mean, that's what you're paying those fees for. Apple is doing the advertising for you and bringing you customers. So, I mean, aren't they entitled to something for it?
Well, we've been talking in generalities. I want to get to the five specific ways that the DOJ says Apple is suppressing competition. So the first thing is about super apps. Will you just explain to me? I'm not sure I really understand what a super app means.
So it's what Elon Musk wants to do with Twitter.
WeChat.
WeChat, Alipay. There are applications that are messaging applications, and within those you can do payments and other functions.
So it's like a mall inside an app.
Well, it's more than just shopping, although shopping could be part of it, but it's an app that does more than one thing. I mean, you can do that now with iMessage. You can do that with Facebook's Messenger app, where you can send payments through there. But it is a, I guess you'd say, a more expansive view on it.
Okay.
When you're doing all of those third-party widgets, I think might be a good word, within the app, it gets to be closer like an app store.
Okay.
Which Apple does not want.
Yeah, so it's a mini app store within the app store.
Yep.
And Apple doesn't want that. Because why?
Because they want to control the experience.
Yeah.
I mean, I know part of it's got to be profit driven.
And the fees too.
Yeah, the fees too.
Because what those super apps could be designed where Apple is not able to take its cut from every transaction that's happening within them. Is that the deal?
Yeah, because it's through that application. I mean, I guess they could impose fees upon it, but the way that the apps are written, it may not let them see everything that's happening.
Yeah, I just want to understand why Apple looks at something like that and doesn't see an opportunity, but sees a problem.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it's control, right? But like I said earlier, the control is sometimes why we do something or why we buy something, right?
We want Apple to have that control.
We want the experience of it. I mean, and Apple's not the only one. You go to Amazon and shop, and you get very used to Amazon's style and the way that you can buy and have things shipped in a timely manner. I mean, how many times now are we asking our Echoes to set a timer, turn
right.
the lights on and off? I mean, it's doing more and more, and we like that. It's easy.
And we like that we all use Macs and Apple products. Everything in our house is really seamless because yeah. we're all on similar devices.
And the control of that
right.
is a lot of tying into how that experience is, right? So being someone who, before Apple really got prolific, you know, would use Windows, and you would install programs, or at least I would, on my computer. And after a while, you install certain programs and your performance suffers for
right.
it, right? That's what they're seeing as a potential downside, or the direct downside that they want to avoid.
Okay, so the super apps are one of five issues. The second is cloud streaming game apps. Why doesn't Apple want cloud streaming apps?
Well, they want you to buy a newer iPhone that will do a lot more and process everything there. Now, this is one I think is going to change with time. The cloud streaming apps are relatively new, and Apple's not the fastest to adopt new features. They tend to test them and make sure that they're going to meet their criteria and their expectations for user experience.
Now, I don't think I understand this either, but I'm not a gamer or a tech person. So does that just mean that I would play through like an internet browser, or what does this mean?
Typically, there's an app to access it. Connectivity hasn't been fast enough in the past to really do cloud gaming, because you're controlling something on a joystick or a gamepad or a keyboard and mouse. That has to be transmitted to wherever the game is being processed and then streamed back to you. So the latency there with a slower connection hasn't made that possible. Now
okay.
internet speeds are getting where it can do it. So the processing for that game is housed somewhere else. Not, you don't have to have the very best gaming computer or laptop to make that happen.
So it just kind of gets back to that hardware software marriage that they find so successful. Is that right?
Yeah. And again, I think this is one of these things that is going to change. I think it will come to Apple's ecosystem. It just might take a while.
Okay. This is the one I really do understand, the messaging app. It is really funny in a federal lawsuit to see a commentary about the green bubble versus the blue bubble when you're texting. But the DOJ says that is anti-competitive activity.
Yeah. I mean, I laugh about it. I think any iPhone user hates when you're in a a thread and you've got like one person that uses Android and it throws everything off. I don't know if it's an aesthetic choice, but it's always felt like a big middle finger to Google and any other messaging company.
But I struggle with how that's different from any kind of branding. I don't know. If we're all on a basketball court together, players can wear different brands of shoes and it not be that big of a deal. That's how the messaging feature has always felt to me.
Yeah, I mean, there are some features that aren't usable from iMessage and Apple services when you're using an Android device that's in the message, right? Because of those green bubbles. Yeah. Android's working on some ways to make it, you know, like if you do the tap back where it's a thumbs up or right. a ha ha. Like Android made some changes that let that show through to their devices, but then Apple like changed something else to where the response back on your phone shows as a separate message saying, oh, Beth liked
right.
this.
Which who cares? Like, I almost think that reminds us all that there are competitors to Apple, that there are other devices out there that people are liking and using.
It's just not as smooth of an experience.
Well,
I mean, it's not.
I don't think we're entitled to a smooth experience everywhere, I guess.
No, I don't either. And this is kind of where I get back to the beginning of, you know, are they doing it for nefarious means or is it marketing? I mean, is it what everybody does?
Okay, 4 out of 5 complaints, smartwatches. It's hard to pair anything but an Apple Watch with the iPhone.
That just goes back to tying all the hardware together, right? You've got all those sensors in your watch, in your phone. It's how that data is passed back and forth. Again, they've created it or they have launched their version of it and they're going to give it the best connectivity, the best access to the features that they have on their devices.
Okay. And then the last one is the digital wallet, that you have to use Apple's digital wallet with the iPhone. And that makes it harder to switch smartphones because once you've started using the wallet feature, you're kind of in it. This is probably the one that I, on my first read of the complaint, was most intuitively drawn to. Like, I thought that does sound problematic to me.
Well, this is another feature that has been, I think, slow on the uptake. So Android users will... Every time Apple rolls out a new feature that they say is new, but Android has had for years. I think the newest one is something coming on the newest iOS will let you move icons around on your home screen and not completely fill it. You know, you can have like a big blank area if you want to. That's been on Android for, I mean, over a decade. Apple is like, oh, brand new thing. Be excited. With the digital wallets, Apple added that near field communication feature to iPhones, and they use it with tap to pay. That's what that is. That has recently been opened up in the latest version to allow third parties to use NFC. So I think it's coming, right? The Apple wallet still will be the preferred and probably most secure way, but I think more openness will come to it.
So the DOJ has anticipated the security argument that we need this control to make sure that things work well and that users' privacy is protected. And the DOJ says Apple just says that when it's convenient for Apple, that is an elastic shield that can stretch or contract to serve Apple's financial and business interests. And I don't doubt that. It's not that I think Apple is perfect or that this lawsuit is baseless. And antitrust law is very complicated. The allegations of this complaint are very complicated. But I wanted to highlight this because I think the question of whether all tech is anti-competitive if it gets too big is a really interesting and important one. And I also think the question about how much competition we want in that space to let people move fast and innovate without the sort of weight attached to those decisions that Apple and Google now feel, obviously. I think they move slowly for reasons. They've got so much on the line, right? And I think there's something healthy and good about that. It just feels like maybe tech is so pervasive in our lives that your traditional monopoly analysis doesn't layer onto it very well.
Yeah, the statement that a monopoly inhibits growth and innovation, I think can be read the opposite direction too, right? If you have too much regulation on them, that may stifle growth as well. I associate a lot of this with the right to repair movement. Have you heard about that?
Yes. I did a Mortise episode about it.
Exactly. I was just doing that to let you call back.
Thank you so much. That's very kind of you.
So companies make a desirable product, but want it tightly controlled. This can be more costly to consumers if they choose that product. So Tesla, right, doesn't want you messing around with the electrical systems and sensors and computers within their car. But also think about this. You know, Mercedes uses specialized parts that only certain mechanics may have the tools to work on. So is that kind of the same, a similar anti-competitive practice? I don't know. They're protecting their dealers. Like we said, Apple wants to control the experience. I think this started out as a check on how the hardware and software best work together. I know some percentage of that has to be profit-driven. That percentage has surely grown, just like the app store fees have grown, right, over time. But I like to think that part of the reason is making a good product.
Well, I'm really glad that we had you here to be the voice of the product is good. I respect the product. I respect the practices. And now I want to ask you to be the voice of the gambler in our next segment, because I would like to talk with you more about sports betting.
I bet I can do that for you.
Sarah and I have talked many times about our desire to age as gracefully as possible, and skincare is a huge piece of that. I spend a lot of time and money thinking about my skin, and I have added Ritual to my routine, which just gives me a lot of comfort. Ritual is here for us. They have created a wrinkle support skin supplement and conducted clinical studies, so we know it's working. They're taking the guesswork out of skincare. Ritual Hyacera is one of several Ritual products that I love. I take the daily multivitamin, I take a probiotic, and Hyacera is that once daily skincare supplement that is clinically proven to reduce wrinkles and fine lines and increase skin smoothness in 90 days. I recently met a friend for the first time in person as opposed to online, and we were discussing the fact that I am 43, and she said, "I cannot believe how young you look." And I thought, thank you, Ritual, for that. Start Hyacera to help minimize wrinkles without compromising on clean science. Hyacera from Ritual is a clinically proven skin supplement you can actually trust. Get 25% off your first month for a limited time at ritual.com/pantsuit. Start Ritual or add Hyacera to your subscription today. That's ritual.com/pantsuit for 25% off.
You know how you learn to really appreciate how good your products are? Leave town and get stuck with whatever shampoo is in the hotel. I take Pros and their custom hair products for granted, y'all. Pros is made for people, not hair and skin types. Personalization is rooted in everything they do, from their in-depth consultation to their made-to-order model. From millions of possible formulas, only one is uniquely yours or mine. I never found beauty products that really understood my needs. But ever since I switched to custom hair and skin routine with Pros, I've noticed so many benefits. My thin hair is moisturized but not weighed down, and my waves have never looked better. And Pros isn't just better for you, it's better for the planet. They're a certified B Corp, cruelty-free, and the first and only carbon-neutral custom beauty brand. Pros is so confident that you'll bring out your best hair and skin that they're offering an exclusive trial offer of 50% off your first subscription order at pros.com/pantsuit. So you get your free consultation, then 50% off at pros.com/pantsuit. That's PROSE.com/pantsuit.
In previous episodes, I have outed myself as a bed-making fanatic. I am very serious about my bed being an oasis, a gift to Chad and me as we crawl into it at the end of a long day. So I want to return to how much I love my Boll & Branch sheets. With Boll & Branch sheets, you can discover a new level of softness. The sheets are made from 100% organic cotton in a buttery, breathable weave that truly gets softer every time you wash them. And you know that I like to do that once a week, so my Boll & Branch are rapidly aging like a fine wine. The sheets look great. I have them in a beautiful slate color. They stay put, so making my bed is quick and easy. They are a bestseller for a reason. The signature sheets feel incredible on night one. They are loved by millions of sleepers, and they come with a 30-night worry-free guarantee. Sleep better at night with the softest sheets from Boll & Branch. Get 15% off your first order when you use promo code PANTSUIT at bollandbranch.com. That's Boll & Branch, B-O-L-L-A-N-D, branch.com, promo code PANTSUIT. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Do
Chad, I sat down to do some research, and I want to just read you three headlines that I found as soon as I Googled sports gambling. Our entire society is becoming addicted to sports gambling. That's from the New Republic. It's not just Shohei. A massive scandal involving sports betting is just around the corner. That's Yahoo Finance. And Louisiana banning in-state collegiate prop bets for safety and integrity of athletes from The Athletic. So it seems like this is a timely discussion. I learned that 38 states, the District of Columbia and Puerto Rico, have legalized sports gambling since the Supreme Court's 2018 decision, allowing that to happen. And guess what? Everybody's making a lot of money off of this. So much money.
Yeah, there is a ton of money out there for it. I do think addiction can be a problem. It's something new. It's something novel. It's something that's definitely been advertised as, oh, quick money.
Yeah. And let's talk about how much money for a second, because this kind of, I was prepared for big numbers, but not this big of a number. The American Gaming Association estimated that $2.7 billion will be bet on March Madness this year. What? That's so much money. $2.7 billion. Also, the teams are profiting from this right now because, number one, they have a gazillion sponsorships. There are some stadiums and ballparks where you can bet on site. Like, they just have it right there for you to do.
Or just outside, right?
Yes.
The Red Stadium, there's a BetMGM location right outside the stadium.
And signage everywhere about it.
All the teams have their sponsorship and their signage. You go to the Bengals game, Betfred is showcased.
I thought this was really good from the New Republic article. To watch sports in 2024 is to be told to gamble, or at least to be reminded that you could also be gambling and that it's apparently more fun that way. And I think that's true. It is so integral to the experience of being at a live game right now that you do kind of think, oh, am I strange because I haven't put some money on this game?
That's right. I mean, you could be having as much fun as Jamie Foxx and everybody else that's in all of the ads that you see on TV.
The other way that teams are making money is that people are watching sports more, and they think that that is because people have money on the game. There was a survey last year finding that 49% of viewers would stay with a blowout game if they had a bet down, compared to 29% of people who would keep watching if they didn't.
Yeah, that's the prop bet part of it, right? You may have a team to win, but, oh, I need so-and-so to get two hits.
So I want you to talk about prop bets for a second. I want you to define that term for us, and I want you to give some examples of the myriad ways that you place bets on games that we watch.
Ooh, we'll have to open up the history on the various apps that I use. So a prop bet is a proposition bet. Now, with that, you can bet on about anything, right? Let's talk about baseball since we're doing baseball right now. So a prop bet for baseball may be if a player gets a hit, how many hits the player gets, how many bases they record. So a single versus a double total bases, number of strikeouts from a pitcher. You can bet on pretty much anything that's going on with the game.
And you often bet those things in combination with each other.
Yeah. So when you put multiple bets together into one bet, that's called a parlay. Okay. So you could parlay multiple games. I'm going to say the Reds are going to win and the Atlanta Braves are going to win. That would be a parlay. And both of those have to hit to make that bet pay out. You could also do within the same game, something that's very much pushed on apps is the same game parlay. So that is picking two or three proposition bets within one game and putting them all on there. So I think during baseball the other day, and I hit this one, I had Ellie De La Cruz getting a hit, Spencer Steer getting a hit, the pitcher getting over 6.5 strikeouts, and the Reds winning.
I recall this because I remember that we were really hoping for Steer to get that hit in before the game ended. So in addition to addiction as an issue, targeting young people as an issue, the blanket advertisement, we have some scandals. Will you talk about Shohei Ohtani? This is the unbelievably talented baseball player who can pitch and hit in a way that feels almost miraculous when you watch him.
Yes, so Shohei Ohtani, double threat player that came over from Japan and played for the Angels for a few years has just moved over to the Dodgers and signed the biggest contract in baseball history. $700 million, deferring $680 million of it. So, his interpreter appears to have a gambling problem and has placed bets in California on sports, which is illegal. California is not one of those 38 states. And that may have caused some of the attention to be drawn to it, right?
Well, my understanding is that $4.5 million were sent from Ohtani's bank account to an illegal bookmaker, and that his interpreter took responsibility for this and was fired, but they're still investigating. He says he had nothing to do with it. Ohtani says he had nothing to do with it.
But that's the part where it gets interesting, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because these payments were made to a bookkeeper. First, they came out in Korea before one of the first games, or right after the first game. The Dodgers played the Padres in Korea, and the interpreter made a statement to the team. And then the interpreter was offered up for an interview, 90-minute interview with ESPN. And during that one, he said that Ohtani paid his debts for him, that the interpreter placed the bets and Ohtani had paid off his debts for him. Well, a couple days later, they come back and Ohtani's attorneys have gotten involved, and he hired the firm out of LA that's kind of a crisis control firm, retracted all of that and said, this is not true. This is the first time Ohtani has heard about this and that the interpreter had stolen this money from him.
And they were friends, right? He wasn't just his interpreter. I understand they have like a pretty good, they had a pretty good relationship.
He's known him since 2013.
Yeah.
In Japan, yeah.
So we'll see what happens with that one. We also have an NBA scandal right now. Jonte Porter of the Toronto Raptors being investigated after there was a surge in prop bets on his performance for two games where he exited early due to injury or illness.
Yeah, and no one's saying that he has placed the bets here. It's just these companies can see when there are really high concentrations of bets on one particular proposition. And these seem to happen with consistency around the games that he left early on.
We have 13 Iowa and Iowa State student athletes accused of illegal sports wagering. 10 have entered guilty pleas. We had an NBA player recently given a technical foul and a huge fine because he made a money counting gesture at a ref after a call he didn't like. So there is a lot going on here. And from the perspective of someone who really enjoys gambling on sports, I just want to know if you think it's ultimately bad for the game. Like, even if we could really deal with addiction and get everybody to bet in sort of the healthy, I've limited the amount of money I'm spending on it way that you do. Even if we could do that, do you think it's bad for sports?
Well, the gambling and the scandals around it, not something new.
Right.
This is not new with sports betting being legalized in the U.S. So go way back to the early 1900s, the Black Sox scandal.
Right.
Those players were given not guilty verdicts for throwing games, but they were banned from baseball.
Pete Rose,
who had a little moment with this Ohtani stuff where somebody had him on camera and he's like, wow, I wish I had an interpreter back in the 70s and 80s.
Yeah, not a great way to handle that.
Not great, but there's been point shaving in college sports. The referee thing that you mentioned in the NBA where they got a technical was kind of funny because a few years ago we had a ref who was betting on games and, you know, making calls that would make the games turn out in his favor where he would win bets.
But what is new is the ubiquity of it, right? That everybody's doing it, that you don't even have to leave your house to do it, and social media. So these players are telling reporters, I just get harassed constantly online. Coaches getting harassed. This Cleveland Cavaliers coach, quote, really struck me. He said, you know, gamblers got his phone number and were sending crazy messages about where he lives and his kids. He said, we may have a 10-point lead and the spread is 11 and people are yelling at me to leave the guy in so we cover the spread. That's outrageous.
It's a lot. I don't know. You talked about individual prop bets. You know, maybe we take some of the potential for scandal out with not having those, or you know, some adjustment to where, I don't know, it's not just on one person. But I mean, even that, in a baseball game, the pitcher matters so much, right?
Yeah, I don't know that I think you should be able to bet on college sports at all. Sorry.
Sad. Yeah.
But you see what I mean? It's already about money in the pros. So let them regulate it and figure it out and punish people when they break the rules. But I just think bringing this to student athletes, where there's already like so much tension about how much money they should be able to make from playing and their performance. And there's so, it's just a lot for people who are under 30 to be dealing with all the time. So I would like to see that end.
And you say that about not betting on college sports. Can't bet on them, but they can get their NIL money.
I know.
That's tough.
It is tough. It's all tough. Because there is so much money there anyway. It's all tough. But this level of harassment, I think, is uncalled for. And I appreciate Louisiana banning those prop bets. I appreciate the NCAA saying we shouldn't do the prop bets anymore. And I would take it farther.
We will continue to clutch our pearls until we figure out the
Stop
best
it.
Way to go forward.
No, I know that I'm clutching my pearls about it, but I think some things are pro-clutching worthy and that this might be one of them. And I enjoy watching you gamble. I have no desire to do it, but I know how you do it. And I trust that it's not tons of our money on the line in these games. It's just like buying a ticket for an experience for you.
Yeah, I do it for fun. And, you know, I have, gosh, March Madness has not been kind to me other than just Kentucky losing. But baseball's here and we've had some good baseball days. But yeah, do it as fun. I mean, that's kind of individual choices how you handle that. And I hope there's enough in place to really help people that are struggling with gambling.
Well, Chad, thank you for representing the voice of the gambler in this episode. I don't know that you represent the gambler experience, though, it's because you do it in such a limited way. But I'm glad that you enjoy it and can speak to it from that place so that Sarah and I are not just like down with all gambling.
Yeah, I mean, you let me out of the box. It's not a sporty Thursday. You just take me out and dust me off every now and then when you need somebody.
I do have Chad on More to Say with me occasionally for Sporty Thursday, where we get to chat about sports. So we are going to end as we always do outside of politics.
Looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura frames are beautiful Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. It's super easy to upload and share photos via the Aura app. And if you're giving an Aura as a gift, you can even personalize the frame with preloaded photos and memories. You guys, I love my Aura frames. I have one in my office. I have one in my kitchen. I have given one as a housewarming gift. I have given one as Mother's Day, Father's Day. They are the most amazing gifts because this app is a game changer, in my personal opinion, in digital frames. It makes it so, so easy to get the pictures on there and even videos. It plays like you're in Harry Potter, you guys. It is the best. I love mine so much. And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code PANTSUIT at checkout to save. Terms and conditions apply.
Do you want a bra that's sexy or a bra that's comfortable? Thanks to Third Love, you can have both. Third Love was started to take all the frustration, ick, and ugh out of bra shopping. That's why they made solutions for every bra problem, aka problems. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen since high school, get smoothing you know where, and have straps that actually stay put. Designed at their headquarters in San Francisco and made from premium materials, they put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before it's given the stamp of boob approval. Comfort and support are guaranteed. Plus, whether you're a AA cup or an H cup, their virtual fitting room will help you find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups. No more feeling stuck between two cup sizes that don't fit. It's time to get your problem solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get 15% off your order with code PODCAST15.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Chad, recently I made an offhanded and, in retrospect, somewhat careless comment about the experience of shopping with you, and you wished for an opportunity to respond, so here you go.
Well, I'm going to stand up for the large-headed Americans trying to find hats, especially when those large-headed Americans have teams whose colors, in Beth's words, fight with your skin.
Okay, so we were looking for baseball hats. And Chad is very careful about all of his purchases. I think this is why he's good at keeping his gambling contained, because he is very, I think frugal is not the word, but discerning. So we're looking at hats, and it is hard for Chad to find hats that fit him well, in fairness. The shopping experience takes a minute. But also, another offhanded and in retrospect careless comment I made is that Chad's Scottish complexion, his reddish hair, that, you know, red tends to fight with his skin a little bit. So I encourage him to go more of the gray, black, or white route as he is looking for primary colors to wear in support of our team.
Yeah, it's tough. They are the reds.
They are the reds. They are the reds. Well, tell the people what has been successful for you as a large-headed American in your hat buying.
I mean, I think people ought to understand here. You can go buy fitted hats. First of all, this one size fits all, complete farce. Not true at all. But you can buy fitted hats, and they make those very big. I mean, our neighbor's in the same situation. Most of the time, you'll see a fitted hat in a 7, 7 1/8, maybe so much as 7 1/2. That's not enough. You've got to hit the 7 3/4, 7 5/8 area to get close to fitting. So it's hard. It's hard finding those. Also, flat bills. They don't work for me.
I agree with that. I agree wholeheartedly that flat bills do not work for you.
But I have found lately, I know everyone's on the edge of their seats.
Please talk more about 7 5/8.
I think the market's getting better. There are some bigger hats out there. New Era just has this stretch snapback hat that seems to fit. Exciting news. Exciting news.
Well, Chad, I want every person who listens to the show to at some point feel seen, and I hope that someone does by this conversation.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for joining me. I love it when you record with me. Thank you all for listening to our chat. If you enjoyed this episode, maybe you know someone who's interested in sports gambling that might enjoy it. We'd love for you to share it. I will be gone next week, but Sarah will be here with you. Don't forget, we have lots of book club content coming up, including the sales of our summer boxes for our premium Spice Cabinet members. So we hope that you'll sign up on Patreon or Apple Podcast subscriptions to get access to that. Everybody have the best weekend available to you.
Pantsuit Politics is produced by Studio D Podcast Production.
Elise Knapp is our managing director. Maggie Pinton is our director of community engagement.
Xander Singh is the composer of our theme music with inspiration from original work by Dante Lima.
Our show is listener supported. Special thanks to our executive producers.
Martha Brunitsky.
Allie Edwards.
Janice Elliott.
Sarah Greenup.
Julie Haller.
Tiffany Hassler.
Emily Holiday.
Katie Johnson.
Katina Zuganellis-Kasling.
Barry Kaufman.
Catherine Vollmer.
Lori Ladau.
Lily McClure.
Linda Daniel.
The Hutchins!
Tracy Putoff.
Sarah Ralph.
Jeremy Sequoia.
Katie Steigers.
Karen True.
Annika Uvaline.
Nick and Elisa Vallelli.
Amy Whited.
Emily Helen Olson.
Lee Shea McDonough.
Morgan McHugh.
Jen Ross.
Sabrina Drago.
Becca Dorval.
Christina Quartararo.
Shannon Frawley.
Jessica Whitehead.
Samantha Chalmers.
Crystal Kemp.
The Rainbow Family!
The Adair Family.
Jeff Davis, Melinda Johnston, Michelle Wood, Nicole Berkles, Paula Bremer, and Tim Miller.